Welcome to UX Research Geeks, where we geek out with researchers from all around the world on topics they are passionate about. I'm your host, Dina Vitkova, a researcher and a strategist, and this podcast is brought to you by UX Tweak, an all-in-one UX research tool. In this episode, I was talking to Miriam, who is a dear friend of mine, and she was also the moderator at the main stage of UXCon that you might remember we were promoting and speaking to the speakers as well. This is a big experiment done right away after the conference where we're really tired and really exhausted from 2 days of moderation. But I really wanted to contemplate and reflect on how the conference was for us. What is it for a researcher to act like moderator and maybe switch in between the roles? And I think we also touched on very important things on how this job actually is political, as well as Miriam is giving some beautiful examples on how to master the moderating job. Tune in. Happy listening. What are the first conclusions? Conclusions it's too soon for, but I don't know, maybe feelings.
The first word that comes to mind is depleted.
Okay, explicate, young lady.
No, I think I feel pretty good about it. I saw some stuff coming in on LinkedIn, but he always speaks pretty hyperbolically on LinkedIn. I think it's good to take it with a grain of salt. And if people are like, oh my God, this was the best thing ever. So amazing. Yeah. He said he had a good time. Okay, good. We all communicate in exaggerated terms on the internet, both negatively and positively. I do think it was a good event. And I was quite pleased to see one of the comments from one of our speakers who highlighted that, hey, this was actually an event that paid attention to representation, or like having a diverse set of speakers. Of course, we can always do better, but I think we did an okay job on that. I'm proud of that, actually.
I'm proud of that, especially coming from this area, that we didn't ignore the world, because you, coming from this middle European area, we could be like, that's not our reality. But I think completely on the point. Yeah, we did an okay job. Still could be better. It always, this topic could be all the time better. Yeah.
No, because I was wondering about this, because you just mentioned us here in Central Europe and just defining how to call this part of Europe, you know, and how to call whatever lies eastward of Vienna. Is that there's a lot of different complicated conversations about how to refer to that part of the European peninsula.
This is where I'm realizing how I balance between those, the introversy and extroversy. On this conference, I got to, because I told you I'm skeptical towards my ADHD diagnosis, but it's something that I'm experiencing mostly in the crowd. Like, I get so excited and I have to be everywhere and I can't stick to a conversation longer than 3 minutes. Then I have to change the conversation. Then I'm listening to other conversations. On the first day at 9 o'clock in the morning, I was already ready, like, okay, I had enough. Then I was like, no, you have to do the job. And then and I'm just thinking about Andreas and Nicole, like, how can these guys even do the job? Because I was just moderating and little stage managing the small stage. And it's just, I am physically, mentally, emotionally exhausted in the best possible way. I don't feel sad or anything, but it's just, I didn't feel so drained for a very long time.
I think they're doing okay-ish. I've seen last year where it was a smaller event, but because it was smaller, of course, they also had to do even more themselves. And now they had like really good support staff, I think. But of course, they're managing so many different things at the same time. Like you said, we need to invest in the people, like the audience and the speakers, and make sure that they feel welcome. I still need to find out if that worked out, but I hope they did. And that's where we invest our energy. But for them, they need to do so much more, right? They're like the faces of it, at least for a way larger crowd than that we are. And, you know, I was so impressed with at the end of the day yesterday how suddenly there was already a video recap.
Yeah.
Yvette is like, how did you do that? Who did that? First of all, whoever did that, they did a fantastic job. But it's like, how did they manage to oversee that, then oversee everything that's going on behind the scenes, manage? And then, yeah, it's just a lot. And also keeping in mind the online experience, I'm very curious how that is. And everybody texting them personally, oh, this is happening. Yeah, okay, figure it out. Like for all kind of logistical things. And it's, yeah, it's a lot. And I think by the end of it, it's also really difficult to realize or to still have the brain capacity to think, okay, is this really relevant right now? Because then at some point, maybe it's when you're exhausted, everything seems important and unmanageable. Like everything is a big deal.
Yeah, that's a good point, because the prioritization skill like somehow falls apart when you are exhausted. And everything seems to be super complicated and super important at the same time. But I'm wondering, because I want to maybe do this episode about self-care. So first, I don't know, we can still get there, but maybe we won't. But I want to ask you, like, how do you feel about, the first question would be, how do you feel about your job, moderating job right now?
Like how I did the past 2 days, or about that particular job in general? I find it hard to say. Last year, I felt good coming out of it. I knew I made a few mistakes. I felt good coming out of it. And then you get feedback and, oh, maybe I didn't do all that great after all. So I wanted to tread lightly, you know, and not be like, oh, I was amazing, to then hear from like a gazillion people, actually, you fucked up there and there. And that really impacted me personally. So I'm a little bit wary of that. I do think I managed, I hope, to not insult anyone. And I was thinking about that this morning. That, because when you and I spoke the first time, we were talking about, okay, what is the difference between interviewing as a professional interviewer for research reasons, the difference between moderating an event and doing like really small tidbits of interview maybe there, or like managing Q&As. Yesterday on stage, we had a question on the screen. And I'm a person, I'm not like a neutral vessel, right? So I read a question and I will probably have an opinion about it. I will have an interpretation of that particular question, which of course is always, you have the same when you have a live audience, but when you have a question on the screen without context, without knowing where that person might be coming from, you know, you have to manage a lot of thought processes. And then you need to somewhat in the moment decide which hat am I going to wear. And if I'm wearing a researcher hat, I would take that question, keep the words as they are, and channel them through to the speaker at that point. As an event moderator, I might take the liberty to rephrase the question a little bit. But of course, that conflicts with my researcher mode, because as a researcher, I'm going to keep the language as is, because you don't want to put words in the mouth or add interpretation. And then as a moderator, I would still want to do right by the original question, but also by not make it difficult for the speaker. Whereas if I would be a journalist or on TV, or without being a journalist, I don't know if that's a thing, but if I would be interviewing for entertainment purposes, you know, then I would imagine that occasionally you would add extra fire to a question, or extra, you do that jump of interpretation if it could lead to a spicier story or a more interesting soundbite or a little bit of conflict, right? Because that's fun to watch. That's the bring out the popcorn and let's have a go. And I think as an event moderator, you have to be between the super neutral researcher position. And then of course, there's the question, does that exist? But at least in the way that we ask questions, and the journalist mode of, I don't care if I insult someone, especially not so much my interviewee, if it makes for juicy television, making it very extreme. And yeah, that's a delicate dance to do, I think. And ideally, I want to incorporate all three. I want it to be interesting, but I also don't want this. I don't think it would get to that point if you don't have full-on conversations before with the speaker, where you can say, okay, this is what we're going for. What are you comfortable with? Should we deflect difficult questions, or do you want to take them? What is your, because you don't want a speaker to be like, oh my God, I was put on the spot. I am not the kind of, maybe that speaker is not the kind of person who's good at coming up with answers off the bat that are understandable and cool. And I think this being the second time I'm doing UXCon, I'm still trying to figure out which hat I want to wear.
How difficult is it for you to change those hats or to decide for one hat?
Sometimes it comes easily, but I would say there's always a little bit of an internal monologue going on when you make snap judgments of, okay, what question, for example, if there's no questions for the audience, I need to come up with a question, right? And this question needs to be interesting enough to capture the audience and at the same time, generous and kind to the speaker so that they have a moment to shine. And for me, I think when I'm switching those hats or when I'm having this internal monologue, if on top of that, I'm having another conversation with myself, all of this while being on stage of, okay, this is a complicated, tricky topic with a lot of societal debate going on around that. And a lot of some discussions are minefields, right? Because there's so many different components to it. And by the nature of the stage, you cannot go into every single nuance of that conversation in that particular moment. And I'm aware of this, but I think my coping mechanism with this complexity is talk more. I get nervous. I know, okay, we're touching upon complicated things. I know there's a chance I'm not going to do it perfectly. And then I'm having this monologue in my head. How can I do justice to the theme? How can I make sure that I demonstrate that I'm not an idiot, but at the same time, keeping it easy enough for people to follow, but also not make mistakes. And like this, just for me trying to explain this, I think it's clear that it's chaos and it doesn't always work well, you know, and then it just comes out. And then I am also always having this conversation with myself. Am I a political person or not? And I think for some people I am not, for others everything is political. And then there's people who just, even with my very, I think, bare minimum of putting it, this conversation out there, who really flagrantly have already labeled me as a radical feminist, a progressive person, not necessarily meaning that in a good way, an idealist, blah, blah, all those things. All of those conversations are happening in my head. Also in the moment when we have a conversation about inclusion, about equity, about motherhood in the workplace, all of those topics that touch me personally, if then there's a question on the screen and I need to interpret it with all these different layers and conversations going on in my head and somehow channel that into a meaningful yet entertaining conversation that doesn't insult anyone, that is really difficult. And then, of course, there's the question, especially if we look at the more radical side of things, maybe it should insult some people. Maybe it's okay to take a stand. But then that's the thing. Me as a moderator, am I supposed to take a stand or should I always be more neutral? And then especially considering it's a business event, which is in and of itself, I think, a little bit of a conflict of interest sometimes.
We can't be, in a way, neutral of not being political because everything became political in the last years. I was just reading the book by Mike Montero, Ruined by Design, like how much we as designers and researchers are responsible for the state of the world right now with all the social media. Staying as much as neutral, I get it, in the moderation role, but also staying human and staying, I wouldn't say, I hate the expression, but moral authority, like you also have this kind of burden. I don't know if that's a good word, but you should be the one thinking about the moral of things as well and keeping it in the room morally right, not going into different direction where it could be. And this is maybe tricky for us too, because we both have big mouths reacting to a situation where we get nervous with speaking more and making more stupid jokes.
And not helpful coping mechanism at all, I both know as well.
So, for example, I was explaining that I work for a client where they really sell cheap clothing. I said Chinese socks. I was like, okay, this is just bad. And it's even more wrong because I was talking about sustainability, about the role of researchers being the moral force, talking to clients that they should be working on their sustainability and fairness and transparency and stuff like that. So it's also being human, making mistakes.
Absolutely. The thing is, if I look at where I see myself on a political spectrum, like I don't really, I think ultimately I am firmly anti-capitalist and anti-growth or like degrowth. I don't necessarily believe in work as a something that is a must that people must do. That's my personality. And then I take that to a conference about business where people make products that they want to sell.
How are you coping with that for yourself?
Oh, yeah, it's not easy. No, I'm not radical in my action. I still live in this world. And so far, I did work in tech for a long time. So things that I really tried not to do when I was in my early 20s, like I was one of the last people in the West with financial capabilities who did not have a smartphone. And I have a complicated relationship to giving up data. But at the same time, I also really hate bad user experience. So where do we land then? There are a couple of companies that I actively boycott. I do try, and I think I'm doing an okay job. I don't think I've bought new electronics in a very long time. Pretty much everything is secondhand, including my laptop, which also just goes to show like how easy it is to get a high quality laptop secondhand, and then they're just being discarded.
But you know what I also want to talk about, because we too, I feel like it, we have something that I'm usually calling verbal or moral hangover. And we have a lot of guilt after moderation because it's a hard job and there are so many impulses that you have to like digest, and you think, did I set this right? Did I do this right? I personally had the hardest time in the second day in the first half, where there were interactive sessions and the speakers needed to me to be more in a facilitation role, where I think it's even there, it's something divided. Moderation is inviting somebody, maybe asking a question, maybe entertaining people, bringing them up to speed, guiding. Facilitation is like really navigating the process. And I really felt that jumping from one role to another, I didn't feel cool about it. I felt like I'm using the strategy of being way too strict, where people are like, oh, she's so much stressing with the time. And then being nice with some jokes. I'm trying to tender it afterwards. What is your guilt when you are moderating? What is left behind when you wake up in the morning and you're like, oh, maybe I did this wrong?
I mean, I think we touched upon it a little bit already. I would be worried that I might have made somebody feel uncomfortable based on their systemic disadvantages that they experience in society. So we're talking about topics like ethnicity, which in the US, race would be the equivalent. I think in Europe, ethnicity is more, might be the equivalent of that. Not the equivalent, but it's a different reality. I think this is also a tricky thing, that when you have an international conference, people bring the conversations from their lived spaces to a different space. And I think the debates that are being had in the US are sometimes conflated because the US has such a strong voice. And I sometimes think that those conversations are being conflated with conversations here in Europe. And I'm not saying that the ones in the US are not valid or that there's not. Obviously, there's very strong ties between what happened with what our ancestors in Europe did and how that impacted the development of the US. In the EU or in Central Europe specifically, in this field, we're also starting to have those conversations. Okay, like what kind of situations exist in Europe where people might feel disenfranchised or where they're not giving a chance? And I've been speaking about this already in the past. First of all, being a woman. Second of all, being in Europe from the other side of the previous Iron Curtain, which feels like such a dated thing to say, the Iron Curtain. But coming from Western Europe, that was all I was taught in school about this side of the world. The Habsburg Empire didn't mean anything to me. I barely knew where Vienna was until I moved here. Let alone know that there's like a whole wealth of stories, history beyond that. Like what I was taught about the other side of the Iron Curtain was, oh, it's all dilapidated factories. When Chernobyl happened at some point, and I don't really know where everything is. And then like in 2008, after high school, or a few years after high school, I went to Poland a few times. All regions have like their own complexities and have certain figures and stereotypes and roles that impact people, and that we are very casual about if we're not the one impacted by that joke or by that casual remark, be they Chinese socks. Somebody's going to be impacted by those words. And for some, it's easier to brush that off and say, oh, that's a joke or a figure of speech. For others, it's, this is actually impacting me.
What I like about this discussion, and we have to have, especially as UX researchers, to have this discussion. For example, people were not happy about speaking to the microphone when we asked them, because on my stage, we were making an audio recording. And I asked multiple times, and some people were like rolling their eyes. And I know I used to hate it, but then I realized, my God, I am such a dick, because my brother is deaf. And I know people who have hearing disabilities who just don't say it out loud, and they're sitting in the same room and they just don't hear if you don't have a microphone. So I said it, the room became tense. And there is also one discussion that I had before with speakers, and it was on the first day, where I was like, if I drop a political incorrect joke, please don't take it personally. I am just really bad in it. And one speaker, it was Javier, asked me, so this is, you are excusing yourself before. And he got a really good point, but I was like, no, I'm just telling you, giving you a heads up. It might happen, but I will, of course, if I do something wrong, apologize after and suffer under it. And I'm going to be really careful about it, but it might happen. And I'm sorry before. But this is the thing where I feel is the elitism, or how do you call it in English, where people say, oh, I might be politically correct, and they just do it because they apologize before. No, you have to still keep watch and be not trying to be a dick towards people and try to be as much as correct. But literal things are, and I'm almost making fun of myself. That's the thing. And when I'm making fun of myself as an Eastern European woman, for example, being all the time angry, 50 Shades of Anger or whatever, and people take it literally and start to lecture me about how shouldn't I talk about Eastern Europe. And that's where I'm like, I don't know, maybe I'm not good with my jokes, but this is also you explaining me stuff about not making jokes about Eastern Europe, and it's probably not so good as well.
I heard some feedback about, like, throughout the conference from people, and they're like, oh, this conference is too careful. People are not having the same rough conversations that might be happening on the other side of the ocean, in the US, in Canada, where people are having a lot more complicated debates. But I think...
But isn't that a different political and social context of Europe, that we are not so sensitive towards few things and our reality is different?
So I think that is partially true. Of course, the situation there is very different. And I think it's good to keep that in mind. I also think that in Europe, we might be slightly less polarized and we do have more conversations. It's hard for me to tell because I'm a white woman from Western Europe. Even though my family was not originally from the Netherlands and we have our own complicated colonial history there. For me as a person, and even as a woman, I don't think I very often felt disenfranchised or not being taken seriously. And that is a very luxurious position to be in. I might have been oblivious. So I would be really curious to hear what is simmering under the surface in Vienna and in Central Europe in general, right? Because there is a lot of tension, and there are a lot of different groups that live in a very small area that have very complicated historical relationships.
Of course, just the thing is, if you look at, for example, the countries in the post-communistic area, which there were a lot of people coming from Romania, Bulgaria, there were a lot of Slovak people, a lot of Czech people. We are just so busy with our own bad political situations that the diversity and inclusion talks are just way too far from us. But they and we just don't see that they are very much a part of what we are going through. It's just on a very different context. And I was just sharing, for example, the post of lady who is now moving from Slovakia because of the LGBTQI+ situation. Last year, there were two people murdered. Our first terroristic attack was against LGBTQI+ people. And she now, after a year, feels that she doesn't want to stay anymore. And I get her. But my first thought was, how many people are going to say that she's exaggerating it from Slovakia? Because we just don't have, we are very technologically forward, way better than Austria and Germany and some Western countries, where I think I was thinking at the conference, oh, the people from Romania and their banking, digital banks, and I don't know, people from Ukraine with their digital citizen services, they must be laughing at some things that people are presenting from different Western countries that we had 10 years ago. But the thing is, when they hear diversity and inclusion topics or equity or whatever, it might be like, oh, that's completely somebody else's problem. And that's where we don't connect on the international conferences, because I would say that blog is socially not so progressive. And that's where this is what I was also taking into account. Like, we have so many people with so many cultural backgrounds here. How do we bring it for context to everybody, which is probably not even possible.
And you also see that how people respond to what is being said on stage. For some people, it's like, yeah, I've heard this 1,000 times before. Like, where's the real action? And then for other people, oh my God, this talk was so inspiring. I'm going to pick up on this. And this was an excellent starting point for me. And that is regardless of where they are in their career or how old they are, or that just really depends on your sociocultural and economic background, I think. I was wondering, though, I had the impression, and I didn't go over, obviously, I didn't see the participant list. I just know of a few speakers. And I am wondering, like, where are all the speakers from Eastern Europe? Where are the Slovaks? Where are the Hungarians?
It crossed my mind. And this is something I want to bring as a topic to Andreas and Nicole, because there are good people in that area. But I think you always need an advocate and you always need that connection. But this is something that I would love to give some tips on people. But I'm also struggling in this podcast about it, because we have to, as a podcaster, we have to have people who are well-known, people who bring us listeners, and I'm trying to mix up with less known people. And just the tradition of, for example, just when you talk about UX research, it's completely different in US and UK. They work on different methods with different budgets. But the reality, and I hope to bring more Eastern Europeans and more people from around the world, because we, even with the attempt to bring speakers from Africa into my podcast, Africans told me it's not really global. And I get it. Two speakers from Africa just don't mean anything. And we are struggling because we don't have the connection with Asian speakers, guests. Mm. So it's also, yeah, if I should be the advocate, I'm taking the role, nudging it into the direction and staying with the thing in mind. It just doesn't have to be diversity hire for a speaker, but it has to be a good person.
Yeah, I think that's also a very interesting place where we find ourselves in the UX field, working in tech, being from Europe. In our cases, I think there's this tension, right? Because we work on an international level, but I wrote my thesis about the relationship between the local and the global and our very physical spaces, the kind of meaning that we give to it and how we then map out those things to have artifacts that kind of bridge the physical space, what we are aware of in the physical space, and what mental layers we have for that. There's some very complicated French writing on that I obviously read in translation and probably didn't fully get, but you know, it's complex how we shape the world and how we see that world. So my point is that in one way, who are we here? Like, just two people in this very tiny piece of the world, thinking that we now need to enable global stages, make sure that we cover everyone all across the globe in this podcast that has a decent reach. It's not like a gazillion people are listening to it. Is it really up to us to make sure that all those voices are heard? Or is it also okay to just make a nice local podcast where we talk to people that we know that are in our network, that are in our local, as in physical space, fins in.
Good question. But I also think you can't just, especially in UX research, you can't just say, it's a typical act locally, think globally.
That's
so I can act here, but I at least from time to time have to get out of my bubble and check with the outer world and check for the people who are outside my bubble.
I think that's a blessing and a curse of our generation, right? Like the world got a lot smaller, which also means that we can engage with a lot more. The question is, should we? And then the question is, can we really, just like how we are wired? And especially when it comes to political topics or seeing what kind of, what a shit show the world is on all sides and what is happening everywhere. It's also, we also reach a kind of a psychological barrier. There's only so many people you can personally relate to. There's only so many people you can commiserate with. And some people are really good at it. They can fight the good fight for every single person who's being locked away unfairly, or for every single class struggle that is happening. And I think that's really impressive. And I wish I was that person. I wish I could do that. And when you talk about guilt, I think that is the eternal guilt that I feel. Maybe it's also like me having some sort of grandiose idea that I can save the world. And then obviously I'm failing every single day. I'm failing at solving the world's problems, which nobody has asked me to do, but which I think is always lingering in the back of my head. And obviously moderating a business conference, that's not going to change the world, right? It's not going to make a dent in this, like the planet that we live in on. But yeah, then at least when I do go on stage, I want to do right by the people that paid a lot of money to be with us. And I want them to be able to take away something valuable, at least within the confines of a career, or ideally a little bit outside of that career. Because as I mentioned yesterday on stage as well, if there's one thing to take away from the layoffs, is we are not our job titles. And there's more to life than work. And I mean that in the most meaningful way possible. Like, it's very quick. People say very quickly, oh, there's more to life than work.
On the other hand, I'm thinking about UX research being in that UX phase, being shaping the world with our work. And I am happy that we are starting the discussion, or that the discussion is so intense right now on how to be inclusive, how to bring the diversity to be alive even more, what means diversity in the context. And that's where I'm thinking, this is what work probably should be, that it has context with the world and even the moderating job. And this is where I would even maybe conclude is a job with a big context, which I didn't realize before.
I think I do have a desperate need for showing the world that when I'm on stage, I think one of my fears is, I think other people have the same fear, and I think it's good to talk about these things more. One of my fears is I'm so worried that people think I'm dumb. I don't know why, because no one ever in my life said, oh, you stupid. But I'm so worried. And I think the thing is, when you go into that moderator role, or you make a few mistakes on stage because you're flustered or something else is happening, or you're surrounded by all these highly intelligent people that are doing these conversations and these talks. I'm also a researcher. I'm also a thinker. I also have sometimes maybe too many thoughts in my head. And I want people to know that, which is probably my vanity, because we have something to prove. I want to show that I can do something, but then all the things that I want to do, like, I'm not actually doing, but at least I'm thinking about them. And I want people to know that I think, therefore I am.
I get it, because sometimes I was like, even thinking of jumping into a speech of a guest and like having a discussion about it, because I know that shit. I know about that shit. But then again, when there was one woman, when one of the speakers, when people were having discussion in smaller groups, came to me and he was like, so you're a researcher, and we really wanted to find out what I'm doing. And I wasn't able to tell him more. I was just like, I do research. That was it. That was my answer. Like, I do very interesting stuff, but I was just in the mood of, I can't right now. And this is where I love what my mom is always telling me when I do a presentation or and I'm preparing for it, or I do, or go for a moderation, she's like, you are serving people. You are important, but you are serving the other ones. You are serving the other ones to shine there.
Mm-hmm.
And the serving is meant with the best possible connotation of the word, because as a Eastern European, I am very, yeah, trying to use the word very consciously.
Mm-hmm. No, I get that. I think I went through that last year when there were people on stage and like, oh, I want to show that I'm smart. Like, also this year, Peter did this talk about design ops. Like, oh, I took that course. I brought this into my organization. I know how that works. I really want to tell everybody that I know this. But of course, it's not about me. Like you said, like we are there in a moderation role to show, to give other people space to shine. And if I then go on there and then be all smart ass and say like, oh, but what did you think about that tiny detail in that course that I happen to know about? Like, that's not my role. That's not what we're supposed to do. We are there to make other people shine, to serve, and to get audiences hyped that something is going to happen, or to maybe not get them hyped, but get them in a solemn thinking mode. Okay, we're going to talk about something serious now. Or you need to set the tone. And of course, something that goes wrong, because we don't always know exactly what's going to be in a talk.
Yeah.
So you have to hope that you set the right mood. And I think as moderators, this is something we can really play with. And this is something you can actively work on and learn, like how to, and I think I did this bit for you last time as well, that you can use your voice to really hype people up because we're going to do something super fun right now. Or you can take a quieter approach and say, we're really going to talk about something meaningful. Let's all take a moment to value what we're about to talk about.
Thank you for listening to UX Research Geeks. If you liked this episode, don't forget to share it with your friends, leave a review on your favorite podcast platform, and subscribe to stay updated when a new episode comes out. This podcast was brought to you by UX Tweak, an all-in-one UX research tool.